The Agile Toolkit. Hi, I'm your host, Bob Payne, and I'm here with Ellen Gottesdiener and Mary Gorman. Hi, and I've not met you before, Mary, so it's, well, I've met you the other night, but yes. This is the first time we've really sat down and chatted. So you guys have a new book out. I'd love to hear a bit about that. I talked to Ellen when she was writing the book. Mm-hmm. And know little to nothing about it other than I have a copy now, which is exciting.
We're glad to give you the copy, and it was quite a joint adventure. It took our relationship to a new level.
Definitely. Pairing on writing a book was an interesting and wondrous journey. It really was. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of surprises in the process. We tried to use agile approaches, agile practices, as much as possible. For example, we had three different releases, and using the personas that we had developed, we had in each of those releases a cross-section of the personas who would be the readers do the review.
Okay.
And the book is completely different in the first release to the second to the third, right, Mary? I
mean, absolutely. That feedback.
Maybe there's three books in there.
Oh, gee.
Don't get us started with that.
But talk about validated learning. It was so powerful. And the ability for us to be together doing pair writing and then get very quick feedback. We also found another powerful aspect was a couple of times we actually had the entire book hanging on walls.
Oh, yeah.
And
nice.
Literally having the ability to see this and the flow or lack of flow. We also used a Kanban board for activities. Mm-hmm. So we really tried, as Ellen and I like to say, we tried to drink our own Prosecco.
Right. Absolutely. And the idea of models and examples, which is a lot of the practices that we talk about, we use those as well. Mm-hmm. One of the things that our second release feedback was we had a case study that runs through the book.
Okay.
And it's about the structured conversation, which we'll talk to you about, that happens for effective planning and analysis. And the case study, the feedback from our reviewers about the case study was, we love this. Punch it out more. Do more. So in our final release, we added more about the case study and went really deep in the case study with some of the analysis practices. So there's examples in the book, and there's models in the book, so that you use both when you're exploring and evaluating and confirming product needs.
So you, and the book's title is Discover to Deliver, which I forgot to mention. But it, you have this sort of, you have it inside an infinity symbol, sort of talking about the interplay and the cyclical nature of multiple releases. And I heard you say validated learning, so are you tapping in a bit to the lean startup model? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. The idea of this concept of having a glimmer in your eye about a particular product and then exploring it, quickly getting that feedback. And we've found that these practices that we are writing about are based on our client work. We do a lot of engagements with clients, and they're all over the spectrum and all over the world. So we've found that many of these concepts resonate regardless of the delivery method that's being used.
You know, the topics around analysis and requirements are going to be with us no matter what the method of the day is, really.
Right.
I mean, it
really
all comes back to what is it that we're building and when are we going to build it? So agile requirements or agile product needs, we prefer to call them product needs, will never go away as a key issue. I mean, we've run into teams that have been doing agile for years and they're still struggling with issues about, quote, requirements and their backlog and how do they make decisions about what to build. So The Discover to the full title is actually Discover to Deliver, Agile Product Planning and Analysis.
Okay.
So the affinity, of course, is the discover and deliver constantly. Mm-hmm. And as we move from discovery into delivery, we have to know how to verify, but also how to validate and use that learning from validation post-release, post-delivery, to discover and refine what you're going to deliver in your next cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe understanding about some of the key concepts around the structured conversation would be helpful for the listeners to learn about. Mary, would you say something about that?
Sure. One of the key concepts for us is to have a partnership, and that partnership incorporates the perspectives of the business, the customers, and technology. And each one of those groups, having the appropriate people involved in creating the shared responsibility,
mm-hmm.
Ellen and I have written about, it's the goal, not the role. And so our goal is to deliver a high-value product, which requires this partnership, equal participation, and ways for them to commonly communicate. A shared communication technique, one of the things we've written about is called the structured conversation. Because many of the folks we work with, they have lots of conversations, they have lots of meetings, but they don't have what they need after that particular session to be able to really get to the next step. And so the structured conversation starts with exploring product options. So when we think about the product itself and a variety of options and exploring what those could be, and yet we don't have time or money to deliver all the options, so we use, I think one of the pivotal aspects is the value. When we have value considerations that would be used as a filter, so you have X number of options, you filter them through the value criteria, and then you narrow that down to the highest value options. So it's this explore and then evaluate aspect.
But then the confirm.
We say the conversation's not over until you have confirmed those high value options.
Right. So you know, and the confirmation is about knowing how you're going to verify. So this is mm-hmm. where examples and models and the idea that Chris Matz has talked about for some years of breaking the model, but the structured conversation involves mm-hmm. you being concrete with those examples, using in smart ways models that articulate what it is the product needs are. One of the things that we found, people throw around different words of requirements and non-functional requirements and are having issues with not holistically looking at what they're going to build. So if you take a user story, for example, it punches out the user role, the user, and the action, and the value from the point of view of the customer or the direct end user. But what we've discovered over the years in this whole world of requirements and analysis, there's actually 7 product dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Stories highlight 2 of them, but there are actually 7. And 4 of them are pretty much functional related, and 3 of them are non-functional.
So what are the 7, just as a...
Well, there's the user, there's action, there's data, and control. And control would include things like policies and rules. So those would be the 4 functional perspectives mm-hmm. of a product. And then there are the 3 what most people would call non-functional, the interfaces for the user to be able to interface with the product itself, the environment, as well as the quality attributes.
Okay.
So we've color-coded these. We use these color semantically.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we look at a story card, we don't want a black and white story card. We want the 7 colors of a story card, which goes back to the conversation's not done until you've considered all of these 7 dimensions.
And when you see the book, that you'll see that we also use symbols. So there's a visual symbol. And what we do with this is you introduce a language. So now all of a sudden the team, regardless of what your formal role is or what partner you are, can have a conversation using those symbols. And when we work with the teams, whether it's training or doing actual workshops, starting up teams, we leave behind these symbols, which will be available on Creative Commons for people to download.
I was wondering if you had a little set of cards.
Yeah, well, we eventually will do other things to help people use them because they really help with the conversation. We get emails and pictures of team rooms with those symbols up there, so they can walk up to the wall and quickly have a conversation. They may navigate, talk about data for a few minutes, and then the rules, and then go over to the user role. So it's a shared language. And the other really powerful thing we found is you can use these seven dimensions, you do use them, and the structured conversation at any planning horizon. So whether you're doing the big view, which is portfolio or product road mapping, or the preview release planning, or the now view, which is your WIP, if you're using Kanban, work in progress, or an iteration or sprint, you can have conversations using these dimensions.
Yeah, and, I like the phrase planning horizons. That's,
So it really works, and it really speeds up the conversation without, it gives structure to it, yet speeds it up. And that thing about value is really, really key. That's been a takeaway. One of the things we do is we have our teams looking at those three partners, the business, the customer, and the technology, and very transparently come up with what their values are. And then all of a sudden there's conversations about technology values that we may not have had before. So, you know, whoever has to make the decision can make more informed decisions.
Even within, say, the business partner role, that often identifies some values that may be conflicting within the business community. So they have to sort of get their act together and decide and use those as they look at their product options. And they'll have to weigh, you know, the cost versus the benefit versus the risk and dependencies. And so it's not just across the partners, it's actually within each partner perspective. So we've had the same thing, the customer is not monolithic. The customers may have different perspectives on value. So this constant being able to trade these off, and as we're trading them off, I don't know if trade off is the right word, but it's valuing collectively. So it's the transparency is very important, and I think it's the intention. And being able to do it when that decision needs to be made, not waiting when we have an emergency or we're not going to make our commitment. So that's also been really very powerful for us.
So how long has the book been out? You say you're getting pictures of team rooms that are using it. Is that from your previous work developing the book, or have you had
from our team room pictures are from using these practices over many years. So the book has been out 4 days.
Oh, okay.
And let's see, I'm looking at my watch today, is August 16th.
So,
it's totally new. It's really done really well at the bookstore here at Agile 2012. And it'll be available on the discoverdeliver.com website toward the end of September.
Okay.
So we just have early release copies here for the conference.
Yeah, it's actually a nicely printed book.
We were very into the usability dimension of this book.
I can read it, which is good as I've gotten older.
And we wanted to be able to allow the user to pick and choose how they would navigate through the book. And Ellen mentioned the personas. So one persona might be from a product management perspective. Uh-huh. And they may choose to hopscotch through the book. And you might be a developer and you might choose to read the book in your own particular order. So we're not locking people in. They don't have to read it from beginning to end. And to help with that, visualize that, we have a navigation bar across the top of the pages.
Yeah, I noticed that.
So you always know where you are at any one time, and then you could jump to another section. We also put a lot of effort into very good glossary as well as an index, again, from a usability perspective, and trying to make sure that the book could reach a number of audiences.
So we have readers that really love case studies, like some of our reviewers said, so they can jump right into the middle, I'm sorry, to the beginning,
right,
and read the case study about the conversation at the preview, big view, now view, and then move on to concepts. Or you may have a product champion, what some people might call a product owner, who wants the big concepts, and they can jump into the concept section and read about the plan and the structured conversation and the partnership and value and get the big picture. And you may have analysts, agile analysts or analysts move transitioning to agile, or testers who want to know more about what are some of the tools and techniques I can use to facilitate having good conversations, and they can go toward the detailed structured conversation section. See the case study in action.
Uh-huh.
So we use different fonts so that you know you're listening to the squeaky clean case study. And we did put a lot of effort in the usability. I really credit Mary because she has a really good sense for that, and keeping that usability as a foremost value for producing the book.
Thank you, Ellen.
You did a great job on that.
Well,
really.
you were the glossary queen.
Well, you know, we talk a lot about how words do count, and having a shared understanding, which is really what this book, at many ways, is the essence, is helping teams build and sustain and maintain a shared understanding. And often people throw around business domain terms that are not well defined, or because you're at one part of the value stream versus uh-huh. another, they're not talking about the same thing. So we need to drink our own Prosecco,
right,
and goes again.
Be able to, speaking for myself, be able to find out what the important words mean.
Right.
So in the book, and whenever you see a word italicized, just pop over into the glossary and you can read it. So, but as I'm sure you're aware, a book, even though the authors end up writing it, is not written by just the authors.
Sure.
It's the feedback from so many people, and we, you know, acknowledge a number of those people that was really pivotal, as well as the feeding by our spousal units,
yeah,
through the writing process.
And very importantly, our clients, and
right,
being able to take these concepts and have a trusting relationship over the years and see these evolve. It's really very affirming, mm-hmm, very rewarding that we have a partnership with our clients also. In that sense, they trust us, we trust them. And so it really, seeing it all come to this point, and yet we really want a sustainable resource here. So our intention is to, over time, elaborate on the website where people can participate and we can continue the conversation there.
Great. And you said you're working on the website, so
right,
that is not fully yet.
No,
that's correct.
Yeah.
We're doing some of the design concepts for that right now.
Okay.
So it'll be available toward the end of September.
Great.
People can get the book from the website, and we'll, as Mary said, we'll add more resources for people over time, incrementally, releasing based on value and feedback from people.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm curious about is, as I think about some of the clients that I have and some of the struggles that they're having, one of the problems that they run into is a delay in feedback because they're working so long in getting the product needs right.
Mm-hmm.
How do you address, how do you move people towards a more rapid feedback? I can actually see some personalities taking the seven dimensions and increasing the time before they get feedback because they're going to be trying to work all seven.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And what we've found is that you pick one dimension to get started, to give you some traction.
Right.
And we're always using optioning. and you're constantly taking, say you have five options for user role, for example, and you quickly would value which of those would be the highest value mm-hmm. for that particular planning horizon, and then you'd say, well, what actions would that user perform? So you're using it as a continual way to explore one thing and narrow your scope on others. So you don't want to explore all the business rules for every user
right.
if all the users aren't high priority. We've got a variety of clients that might start with a different dimension. So if you're in a regulated environment, you have a new regulation that has to be enforced, you might start with rules, prioritize those rules, and then go find the actions that would support those rules.
Or if you're doing query and reporting, you want to think about data, which
right.
is the blue color, and what data is in scope for the types for the queries, and then you might back into who would be asking the questions and what would some of the questions, which are scenarios or actions.
Sure.
So you thin slice your, the actual process is actually very thin sliced
mm-hmm.
and it happens very rapidly. Some of the preconditions is clarity around your value criteria
mm-hmm.
and transparency. So we've had situations, I remember a couple months ago working with a team doing release planning, and we did that work around the partners and then defining the value criteria, and we had a ranked list of value criteria that had been consolidated. The product champion said, okay, it's this, 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 in order, and as we were doing the optioning, he kept turning around to the flip chart in the back that had that list, and you know, I gave him a marker, and he would highlight the options that were high value, and so it was moving really, really quickly. The other precondition is that you know what your planning horizon is that you're talking about.
Right.
So that you're not navigating up and down. So are we really at the preview right now? Are we talking about the now view? Your level of granularity for the options, the conversation, is going to vary.
Mm-hmm.
Many people are familiar with stories. A story can be very, very thinly sliced at the now view. If you're at the preview or the big view, the release or the product roadmap, it might be something like a feature or
sure.
a minimum marketable features, and it'll be bigger and chunkier.
Mm-hmm.
So we need skills on the team for facilitating that conversation and making sure we're having the conversations, using the value criteria, introducing examples and models appropriately, but not getting too much into the content so they can help manage the conversation. So buried in there, embedded in that, is that the team builds some good collaboration and facilitation skills that could be shared across the team
mm-hmm.
to manage the conversation.
So Bob, you started by asking us, you know, some of these teams could potentially overanalyze, or they could get mm-hmm. caught up.
Right.
And it does take a disciplined approach and a certain clarity of that scope. And everyone has to be mindful of that. And Ellen mentioned having someone who might be a facilitative leader of the group. I was working with a group a couple weeks ago. Yeah. And it took them a little bit, like a couple hours, to realize that they could all wave their yellow card, which means, do we really need to be discussing this right now? And once they got in a groove, they realized that they had that responsibility to be constantly mindful and be intentional about what their scope was.
Great. So when is the, so these are the pre-release, and I'm trying to remember whether we actually mentioned when the book itself ships. Is that in September?
Yeah.
Or, okay.
Right, late
okay.
September.
People can order it at that point through the website. And we're really excited because the ability for us to then pick up and continue the energy. Mm-hmm. We had a great session Monday morning, a half-day session with this, and that was really
yeah.
engaging.
Yeah. It's called the Product Partnership, Structured Conversations to Deliver Value. Mary and I also did sessions yesterday.
Uh-huh.
On topics that you would think would be completely unrelated because they're, you know, that what we did on Monday was more about the head, the product needs, maybe the thinking, and introducing these concepts and practices, getting folks to do some workshop activities. But then yesterday in the morning, my session was about decision-making, trusted and transparent decision-making.
Mm-hmm.
And in the afternoon, Mary
I had about social contracting and successful ways to collaborate in certain patterns using what we call the matchup for a team to get started, as well as concepts on trust and feedback. So we're finding that it's wonderful to be able to have the seven dimensions and the structured conversation, and they are supported and surrounded by these other
the ability to really collaborate and be transparent. It's just essential.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
So, you're preaching to the choir here.
But. Yeah, right. And hopefully the choir listening right. to the podcast today.
Hopefully. Yeah.
So,
well, great. It's been great having you guys in.
Thank you.
And what else have you found interesting at the conference?
I just came from Luke Coleman's session, Innovation Games, but for the nonprofit, and that was very, very stimulating to think about how our community could potentially have a major impact on our governments.
Sure.
And helping our citizens to be able to have that voice. So I am very, very excited.
Yeah. What Bob's doing here in this corner at Agile 2012 is also a piece of that. Is you've been running the
a
tiny little piece, but I mean, come on now, you know, we should also we should be interviewing you, Bob, with Agile Philanthropy.
Yeah,
what you have really, really stood out in the community all these years in promoting that idea, and I mean,
thank you for that. Yeah,
it's really Bob is you're always here. At these major events and reminding the Agile community about, you know, social awareness. And Luke's work is also in that space. That's just
yeah, I'm hoping
really
to talk
important.
With him today. I haven't done a podcast with Luke yet, but
excellent. Need to do that.
Good.
So that was one of your really great sessions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Session I went to this morning about prioritization perils. I was talking about different thinking modes that we can get into and biases that we can get into that can prohibit you from thinking clearly maintaining because our brains, one of the points was that our brains are acting differently when you're working on an Agile team instead of being focused waterfall where you can say, talking about building a spec and passing it along to somebody else and you don't care. You need to be completely engaged in the process, and it's very taxing on our brains.
It is,
So. just the simple points about eating well and resting and some of the brain research about our brain thrashing and thinking, it's very powerful. We need to be mindful of taking care of ourselves as we're doing this good work.
Great. Any chances for an audio book?
An audio book?
Yes.
I
consume most of my other books through audio.
That's
really interesting. That's not.
Yeah, and nobody in the Agile community is releasing audiobooks.
Wow.
And there's so many of us are traveling and, you know, you're on a
really
plane.
That's a really interesting point. I think we'd have a real challenge, Bob. One I think we could step up to, but because of the visualizations that we use, we'd really want to be able to support, just for example, even the infinity symbol and what that means to us, as well as the structured conversation. There's a flow to that conversation visually, as well as in the conversation itself. So that might,
Some
audiobook formats have the ability to have some visualization or point them to the website's possibility as well.
I think that's a very provocative idea. We do have a lot of conversations in the case study. So if I could only use the voice of Roald Dahl, who did the wonderful recording of the Harry Potter. You have kids. Have you heard the Harry Potter tapes at all?
I haven't, no.
Oh, they're just fantastic.
My wife is reading those. So.
This man does the hundreds of voices.
And oh, really?
It's brilliant.
Oh, okay.
So we have some of the characters we have are Deb and who are
Pat.
Some?
Pat.
Our UX person.
Right.
So we have different characters, so we'd have to change our voices for the different characters, which would be fun. That's a really
As long as you pull it off well.
Yeah.
It really aggravates me when people try that, when they're reading and And they don't pull it off well. So,
so you might need a
real voiceover person
for that. I think we're going to have to engage you as one of our reviewers then. And we need acceptance
or
criteria.
That's right. We're going to need
No, I'm not. Yeah. You don't want a lot of verbalized pauses, and that I do that all the time.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, that's a very, very provocative idea. Thanks for sure. making that suggestion.
Well, thanks for coming by.
Oh, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
The Agile Toolkit podcast is released under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. For more information, call me, Bob Payne, at 202-903-6854 or drop me an email, bob@electroglide.biz. And remember, keep it simple.